The Warner Brothers logo is shown. British Sky Broadcasting presents Next of Kin, starring Patrick Swayze as Truman Gates, Liam Neeson as Briar Gates, Adam Baldwin as Joey Rossellini, Helen Hunt as Jesse Gates, and Ben Stiller as Lawrence Isabella. Directed by John Irvin, music composed by Jack Nietzsche, audio described by Kieran McLaughlin. In a valley surrounded by heavily forested hills, a small village nestles under an overcast sky. A car slowly moves along its otherwise deserted main street. Nighttime. As torrential rain sweeps across a city street, several cars sit stationary next to a curb. The block where they are parked consists mainly of darkened shop fronts. At first floor level, dull neon lights frantically flicker on and off around the edge of a sign advertising a loan bank. The lights of a police car pierce through the gloom as it pauses at a junction. Emerging from a men-only hotel, several figures hunch their shoulders against the downpour and hurry along the pavement. Two men sit in the front seats of one of the parked cars.
Uptown, Saturday night. A hell of a place.
Fucking hillbilly heaven is what it is. I say to hell with this shit. Let's go upstairs and get this asshole.
We'll wait for Gates. These are his people.
A man in a baseball cap comes out of the hotel, casually holding a rifle by his side, and walks off. The police car pulls up next to that of the two men. They watch as a man wearing a broad-brimmed hat gets out and heads towards them.
Sorry to take you away from dinner, Truman.
What do you got?
Goddamn hillbilly wacko tore up two men in a bar. Practically took the head off one guy with a bottle and the other guy was dead before he even hit the floor. What the fuck gets into these people of yours, Gates?
Sometimes folks make us a mite testy, Zimmer. Got a name?
Willie Simpson. Manager said you might know him.
Hey, Gates, I'm gonna give you 15 minutes. Then I'm going in there and I'm gonna put some hair on the wall. You follow what I'm saying?
The man in the hat, Truman Gates, smiles wryly and walks off. Next, he's on a staircase.
Herman, you watch yourself, officer.
Like a junkyard dog.
He emerges from the gloomy staircase into a lobby area where men sit at tables. Several of them warily clock Gates. One of them approaches.
What kind of shape is he in, Melvin?
They pulled a knife on him first. They was messing with this woman.
I see he gets a good lawyer.
Hell, back home, he wouldn't have needed one.
Well, he should have drove him home and cut him there, Melvin. Would have saved us a shitload of trouble.
Two cartridges are loaded into the chambers of a shotgun. Whistling, Gates cautiously moves down a badly lit hallway towards a doorway where he pauses.
Willie? It's Truman Gates. I wonder if I come in and talk.
You alone?
Yes, sir, I am.
Come on in.
Stepping into the room, Truman removes his hat. Facing him, a bearded man raises a rifle which he holds in his right hand. His left holds a burning cigarette. Sitting with discomfort on a bed, he stares at Truman.
I heard of you. Your family's from up to Perry County, ain't
you? Yeah, up near Hazard. Sit down.
Truman takes off his coat. He wears his long hair tied back in a neat ponytail and sports a shirt and tie.
Damn thing's right up on me.
He places two handguns next to him and stares at Simpson, who drags nervously on a cigarette. His beard and lips are stained with blood.
So you won't watch the TV?
The TV screen is smashed. Seeing it, Truman smiles.
She pissed me off.
See a doctor?
Oh shit, man, I know him worse than that.
Where'd that be?
Allegheny Mining Corporation, number 3.
Simpson moves to the window. Outside, a police truck pulls up. Reeling back, Simpson deliberately bangs his head on a metal locker.
Harlan County. Yeah? I used to hunt up here with my brothers up on Daggett's Ridge.
Shit, I know just what you're talking about. Hey, the ghost up on that ridge.
No kidding.
Yeah, one time my dogs took me straight down this holler. And there weren't no wind blowing or nothing. It just got real cold. Then all at once them dogs started howling.
Truman glances at his watch, then at a clock. It's 3:15 in the morning.
Like they was talking to the dead. Yeah, man, there's ghosts up on that ridge.
They're coming for you, Willie. I know, you'll take a couple of them with you for sure, but they'll get you just the same. Or we could ride down the station together. Just a couple of fellas from the hills.
Willie looks at him with a mixture of suspicion and confusion. Truman stands.
You got my word on that. I know you ain't scared to die, Willie. You just ain't no place to leave your ghost.
Truman emerges from the hotel with Willie. In his right hand, he carries Willie's rifle.
Good work, Truman!
Lenny, grab him!
Oh, no, Zimmer.
This piece of shit's homicide now, pal!
What are you doing, you asshole? What are you doing? Touch my prisoner again, I'll break every bone in your body. You hear me? Huh? You follow what I'm saying? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Truman has taken one of the cops by the throat and forced him against a car bonnet. Anger flashes from his eyes. Daylight. A flashy silver coupe turns into a parking lot. The driver is Truman. Several Luton-style vans with the word Northside emblazoned on their sides are parked next to some kind of warehouse. Inside the building, a young white man is loading packets of cigarettes into a vending machine. Truman approaches him from behind.
Hey.
Hey, brother. Catching the thieves lately?
Same old, same old. So what happened to you the other night? Jesse and I waited for you for over 2 hours.
That'll lay pickup out in Cicero. I thought we left it loose about dinner.
Hey, no big deal. She only spent half the day making your favorite dinner.
Damn, tell her I'm sorry.
So you heard from Briar lately? He's still after you to stay clear of me?
Give me a break, Mom.
Mom?
Yeah.
What, are you afraid I'm going to talk you into staying here, leaving all those good old mountain times behind?
Well, ain't you?
Yeah. But you're a big boy, Gerald. You can make your own decisions. I'm just trying to make things easier.
Bullshit. You're just as bad as Briar. Just smoother.
Now, wait a minute, little brother.
No, you wait a second. I feel like one of them little countries stuck between two big superpowers. Both of them claiming to be helping. Actually, they're just trying to outdo one another. And I'm the one in the middle catching all the shit. The fact is, I don't like it here. And as soon as I earn me enough money to put down on a coal truck, I'm heading home. Now, that ain't Briar talking. That's me. Let's go, David.
Now, in an ornately decorated church, a figure walks past rows of pews towards the altar where musicians perform. Taking a seat a few rows from the front, Truman, for it is he, settles down to watch the recital. As the piano solos, the female violinist pauses and catches Truman's eye. He smiles apologetically. She has a willowy figure with long fair hair brushed behind her ears. Now, as people mingle at the post-concert reception, she searches Truman out.
Well, what a surprise. You were late.
He smiles.
Sorry.
It's okay.
He was wonderful, though, what I heard.
Thank you. How was Gerald?
He got another letter from Briar. And I pushed him a little bit too hard, so he probably won't speak to me again for a month or so. But other than that, everything's great. And he says that I do it just to get back at Briar.
He's right, you do.
That's what I love about you, Jesse, darling, the way you sugarcoat things.
They kiss tenderly. Jesse looks him in the eye.
sister.
A lavishly decorated restaurant.
Hey, where are you been? Say some girls.
I'm sorry, I'm late, Papa John. I'm sorry, Gabrielle.
The new arrival, a young man, joins a family group at a table.
You're late. That doesn't matter. Come on, you're here. That's all that counts. This is a special occasion.
He turns to the new arrival.
Joe, I want you to meet Lawrence Isabella, my son. Lawrence, Joy Rossellini, I was telling you about. Lawrence is my son from my first wife, Sylvia, who died.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet you, Joey. I've heard a lot about you.
Yeah, good things, I hope.
Oh, he's been bragging about you.
Hey, I've been telling Lawrence how much he could learn from you.
Like what?
Business, Joy. He wants to go to work for his papa. I couldn't be prouder.
He squeezes Lawrence's shoulder, now at Truman and Jesse's home.
Honey?
What?
You believe in hereafter? Then you know what I'm hereafter.
Not now, go away.
Bare-chested, Truman approaches her playing a violin. With a playful smile, she runs from him. He follows her.
Bravo.
You want to play on the teeter-totter?
As he gets closer, they stare lovingly into each other's eyes.
Love you.
You know what happens when you say that to a mountain boy?
With a smile, she raises her eyebrows. She flees upstairs with Truman on her heels. Nighttime. Outside Diana's restaurant, a young man gets into the cab of one of the north side vans. A police car passes as the van pulls away from the curb. On a side street, Joey Rossellini watches from a stationary car. He signals to someone outside the car.
All right, Rhino, stay close.
No problem.
Let's go.
Joey's driver pulls slowly onto the main drag and drives after the van.
Teach these fucking punks a lesson.
Never on the horse, my fancy's done.
Hey, I don't bitch when you listen to that. What you call it?
Rap music?
Rap. Rap. Not rat. You ever try to hum any rap? Homeboy, you don't mix rap and hum music. The different flavors.
Looking amused, Gerald Gates continues driving. The van makes a right turn. In the car behind.
Okay.
Gerald sees flashing police lights in his wing mirror.
Name it, we're being pulled over.
That ain't no cop, man. This a hit. What are you doing, Gerald?
Hold on.
As the car attempts to pull alongside the van, Gerald guns the accelerator, making a hard left turn. Now on a long stretch of deserted road, the car does pull alongside.
What are you doing?
The car pulls in front of the van and swerves to block its way.
Gerald, stop it!
As Gerald swerves to avoid the car, he crashes through a scrapyard. On the street, a second car has arrived. Gerald's wild ride continues. The van bombs down a gloomy, narrow street.
Get him, Paulie!
The car repeatedly rams the side of the van.
Gerald, let him have it, man. It ain't worth it.
Why isn't he stopping?
He'll stop.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Now Gerald rams. Swerving in front of the car, Gerald attempts to pull away on a busy junction, but the car sticks to his tail, eventually forcing him off the road and into a large pile of rubbish.
Holy fuck!
Gerald's colleague climbs from the cab window and makes a run for it. Wielding shotguns, two of the hoods run towards the driver's side of the van. Gerald tries to escape.
Wait.
His colleague watches from the shadows as Gerald takes a beating.
Leo, get the door.
As Gerald is carried off, Joey gets out of one of the cars. Gerald is thrown bodily into the back of his own van. Meanwhile, Joey opens one of the car rear doors to reveal Lawrence.
Hey, Lawrence, come on. You want to learn the family business? Let me show you how we negotiate. Come on.
Looking unsure, Lawrence, dressed in suit and tie, gets out. Impatiently, Joey pushes him forward. Gerald's buddy, who looks increasingly worried, watches as Joey steps up into the rear section of the van.
Come on, Lawrence. Come on. Come on up.
Lawrence climbs up next to Joey. The rear door is shut. Gerald is bent double on the floor.
What's wrong with you, huh?
Joey kicks him.
Don't you watch TV? Don't you know when someone wants you to pull over and talk to him? Huh? I didn't tell you to get up.
He kicks him again. Lawrence looks away with distaste.
You ain't taking my truck.
You ain't? You're a fucking hillbilly, aren't you? No wonder you didn't pull over. You never seen a TV before.
Clean-cut Joey has pulled on a pair of gloves. He hunkers down next to Gerald.
What's your name?
Gerald squints at him.
Gerald Gates.
Gerald lunges towards his own foot, but Joey rams his head against the side of the van.
What the fuck is this?
He pulls a knife from Gerald's trainer. As Lawrence flinches, Joey opens the knife blade, examines it, closes it, and pockets it.
You know, Gerald, I've dealt with niggers, pikes, Polacks, chinks, spicks. If God made it, I've seen it. But you fucking hillbillies, you are the dumbest I ever met.
Joey looks down with surprise at where Gerald has spat on him.
Go to hell.
You know, Gerald, I gotta hand it to you. You got balls. Stupid as shit, but major balls.
Hey, what are you doing?
Joey points his gun straight at Gerald. Gerald's buddy runs aimlessly towards a set of railway tracks. A solitary street lamp bathes the scene in a cold blue half-light. The bewildered man disappears slowly into the gloom. A car screeches to a halt on a rain-soaked four-way urban junction. A man gets out and walks purposefully through the murky semi-darkness. It is Truman. A man waits for him. Truman looks sick with worry.
The owner of the restaurant asked for the machine to be removed last night. It was an outfit setup. Gerald just happened to be the driver. God, Truman, I'm sorry.
Looking contemptuous, Truman shakes off the cop's attempt to squeeze his arm. Next, Joey's with Papa John, Isabella, and another man.
You act like I was supposed to know his brother was a cop. He's a fucking hillbilly. How many hillbilly cops you know about, Frank? Papa John, 40 years. You ever hear of a hillbilly cop? I did what I had to do. It was clean, am I right, Frank? Clean?
Frank stares at him fixedly.
Bottom line is, did we get what we wanted here?
I'm supposed to meet Northside's lawyers at 3 to discuss our proposal.
It's good. It's real good.
Hey, relax, Frank. Quit worrying.
I'm paid to worry. And this isn't the first time you've made me anxious.
You do your job and I'll do mine. Go home, Frank. Get some sleep.
With a weary look, Papa John glances at Frank. Grim-faced, Frank stubs out his cigarette, shuts his briefcase, and moves to the door, which is concealed behind a protruding wall. Frank shuts the door without leaving, remaining unseen by Isabella and Joey.
You shot him in cold blood, Joey.
Joey looks mildly surprised.
Did Lawrence tell you that? Papa John, you gave me 2 instructions. Teach him the business and take care of him.
Joey holds up Gerald's knife.
Joey.
Joey shuts his eyes and clasps his hands over his heart. Now Frank leaves, silently shutting the door. Standing next to a railway line, a group of five figures are silhouetted against the thick grey mist. The front light of a train appears around a bend. Its giant hulk smoothly glides into view and passes alongside the waiting group. Inside the train lies a coffin. The train comes to a halt in front of a tumble-down covered platform. A porter alights and places a small footstool on the muddy ground next to the train. Glancing warily towards the group of waiting figures, Truman, again in his broad-brimmed hat, steps down onto the footstool carrying two bags. Putting them on the ground, he then turns to help Jesse disembark.
Jesse, best wait here. I ain't real quick with strangers.
Jesse looks towards the waiting group.
I'm your wife.
No, I ain't talking about you, honey. I'm talking about me. Okay?
Okay.
Walking steadily, Truman approaches the man standing at the far end of the platform. As he gets closer, he stands in front of an older man with thinning white hair wearing a suit and tie. The man looks at Truman, smiles, and extends his arms in greeting. Truman takes off his hat.
Grandpa?
Truman?
They embrace warmly. Then Truman looks at a bearded man also in suit and tie, but wearing an incongruous baseball cap.
Briar?
God damn it, you're still brothers, ain't you?
Briar extends a hand.
Truman?
Truman? Cousin Hollis? Snake? Uncle Pierce?
Truman?
Cousin Selkirk? Uncle DeWitt?
Truman? Get the fellow that killed him?
No, sir, not yet. They're working on it.
Is that your wife?
They look at Jesse.
Name's Jesse.
A door on the side of the train is opened, revealing the coffin. Briar and Truman step towards it, where they pause. Now the coffin rides on the back of a pickup truck. Truman and Jesse sit next to Briar, who drives. All three stare straight ahead at the narrow winding road, lined on both sides by trees.
Lean on the everlasting arms, lean on Jesus, lean on Jesus. Safe hands from day to day, lean on the everlasting arms, lean on Jesus.
An elderly woman reaches for a framed photograph and, wiping it with the hem of her apron, places it next to the coffin. As she stares at it fondly, she continues singing.
Jesus, leaning on Jesus, leaning on the everlasting.
It is Gerald's graduation photograph. As spoons are dropped by a young girl, Jesse stoops to lift them. Grandpa stares into the kitchen. Under the gaze of the womenfolk, Jessie appears uncomfortable and self-conscious. Walking away from the small kitchen table, she is confronted by Briar.
I want to thank you for being good to Gerald. His letters, he always said, made him feel at home.
Jessie nods faintly. Briar looks at her steadily. He glances over her shoulder towards the table, then turns away. Next, the womenfolk sit on the house porch. Jessie comes out. Her hair looks damp, as if she's just washed it.
How'd you and Truman meet?
At a church.
Truman in church?
Actually, he was investigating a robbery.
Truman says you play the fiddle.
Mm-hmm. I teach violin.
You know where it is, aren't you?
Would you?
Now?
Why, sure, while we were waiting.
Sure.
Emerging from the house, a young girl hands Jessie a violin.
Wait, can I hear that?
Jessie places a cloth on her shoulder, then cups the violin under her chin. Truman is watching through the screen door. Truman has emerged from the house and stands next to his mother. She clasps his hand. In another part of the village, watched by three colleagues, a man throws an axe, impaling it on a playing card fixed to a log. Pulling out the axe, he looks up, his attention caught by the music. A young woman hanging washing on a line stares transfixed at the music coming from the Gates' house. With a suit jacket draped over the shoulder of his white shirt, Truman walks past a car with the name Briar written above the driver's door. Walking on, he passes a tractor and a pickup truck, moving towards a drab grey trailer. He enters the trailer, which is chaotic but homely. It is obviously Briar's home. His brother is getting dressed.
Come on in.
Briar picks up a beer can as Truman looks around at the cramped living space.
What you looking at? Ain't changed none.
Been dirtier.
Truman indicates the can.
Got another one of those?
Refrigerator.
Truman goes to the fridge.
Did you get good reception of the dish outside?
Only when the TV ain't busted.
Inside the fridge, a deer's head.
Nice trophy. Ain't season yet, is it?
Bow season. Got it about 2 weeks ago.
Truman stares at photos.
Kinda hoping Gerald and me was...
A photo of Briar with Gerald.
No.
He turns tearfully away and takes a swig on his beer. Truman opens his can and sits down.
So where's the coal truck?
Bank took it when the mine shut down.
When was this?
About the same time Jewel went north. Kind of makes sense, don't it?
Briar, he never told me.
That's because I told him not to. He wanted me to go. Chicago, shit. Not me, brother. I'll be there and you can have it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to leave these plush accommodations either.
At least it's my place. I still own the land it sits on. Can open the door in the middle of the night and take a piss on it if I want.
But don't worry about paying for the funeral. I'll take care of it.
Is that what you come down here to talk to me about? Paying for his funeral?
No, it ain't. God damn it, Briar, you act like you don't bother me about Gerald. Don't you think I ask myself 10, 100 times a day what I could have done to stop it? You tell me what I could have done.
Damn what you could have done. It's what's got to be done.
Briar.
Briar shakes his head as Truman looks at him appealingly.
Ah, Rosie. Rosie.
A bearded man has a large snake draped over his arm as hand in hand Truman and Jesse walk up a shallow incline leading away from the village.
So how you handling all this?
Better.
They look round to see a young boy taking aim with a bow and arrow.
You can do better than that. Tag in, Henry.
Truman pulls the arrows from the target.
You're doing pretty good.
He hands the arrows to the boy.
My daddy said you used to be good with a bow and arrow before you went off to the city and forgot everything.
Well, we forgot everything? I've seen this man shoot a hummingbird out of the sky at 75 yards. You ever heard of William Tell? This man makes William Tell look like a beginner.
Show us.
Yeah, show us.
Show us.
Come on.
Well, thank you, darling.
You're welcome, darling.
You know paybacks are a bitch, don't you? This.
Truman takes the bow and one arrow from the boy. Fixing the arrow in place, he takes aim.
Good luck. Just want to say good luck.
Truman has scored a bullseye.
Now your turn. Knock your arrow.
Watched by Truman, the boy carefully strings the bow.
Now put three fingers. Yeah, good. Right in the first gear. Yeah. And don't put that finger up there. Keep that finger down. And let your breath out as you let go.
Yeah.
All right, congratulations. You just got yourself a 10-point buck.
No, sir. I just killed the man that shot Uncle Gerald.
Truman glances at Jesse, then ruffles the boy's hair. The words "died August 8th, 1988" are inscribed by hand on a page of deaths. Blotting paper is placed on the ink and the book closed by an elderly man in glasses. He pushes the book towards Briar.
It's yours this time, Briar.
In a penny, Mr. Follis, and thou shalt give. Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand.
Briar, the Chicago police will catch Gerald's killer, but we gotta give him time.
We know about city strolling. We're only the lived-in one, or we got Ken there.
And we knows about your police, sir, too. Ask anybody here whether your big city cops ever cared about us, living or dead.
I'll grant you we ain't perfect, but we are gonna find Gerald's killer. And as soon as we make a case, he is going up for murder one.
Damn it, man. He was our brother.
Alive for alive. Amen.
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 Briar places his hand on the thick book, obviously a Bible. Next, Jesse and Truman are on the train. She tenderly takes his hand and leans her head against his shoulder. Looking out the window, he sees a ragged man with a thick, unruly beard carrying a rifle. The pair briefly lock eyes before the train plunges into a tunnel. At home, Truman studies police mugshots. He circles one of the photos with a red marker pen. Jesse approaches.
What case are you working on?
These are some of the boys that might have killed Gerald.
Why has Tony let you have them?
Homicides are running out of leads, and they haven't been able to find David Jenkins, Gerald's friend. These guys may be the reason.
Did they ask for your help?
No. Jesse, if Briar kills one of these men, they'll kill him. I've already lost one brother. I can't lose my other.
No, Randall, I told you I don't give a fuck about the Doc situation. As long as Isabella's happy, everybody's happy. Hey, Leo, I owe you a fin. I know that. Excuse me.
Joey Rossellini walks through an office space which is being rearranged.
What the hell's that? Closed circuit TV for security. Lawrence is putting it in.
Lawrence, huh?
Yeah.
I've already lost one brother. I can't lose my other.
No, Randall, I told you I don't give a fuck about the Doc situation. As long as Isabella's happy, everybody's happy. Hey, Leo, I owe you a fin. I know that. Excuse me.
Joey Rossellini walks through an office space which is being rearranged.
What the hell's that? Closed circuit TV for security. Lawrence is putting it in.
Lawrence, huh?
Yeah. Well, you be sure and tell him not to put one of those in my office, huh?
Okay.
Hey. I ordered a leather sofa.
You Lawrence Isabella?
Come on, just put it down here. Just let it
easy. Nah, his office is down there. It's my office. See? Hey, Rhino, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that's good. Just right under the painting's good.
Here. Lawrence, what are you doing? It's my office.
Come on, Joey. I need the one by the stairs. I'm here all day. I mean, it's okay. I cleared with Dad. Besides, you're never here, so it's...
Joey nods knowingly down at the much smaller Lawrence. In bright sunshine, Truman's car pulls up at the gate of the warehouse where Gerald used to work. He's stopped by a security guard.
Help you? It's mighty. All right, go ahead.
The trucks in the parking lot, formerly marked Northside, now have a different logo on their sides. Joey's in his new office.
This isn't my office. No fucking way.
He walks back to the hall.
If it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be getting to play businessman anyway. Hey, who are you?
My name's Truman Gates. I'd like to talk to somebody about that driver who's killed. He's my brother.
Joey innocently shrugs his shoulders.
Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
Lawrence shows up.
This is Mr. Rossellini. I'm Lawrence Isabella. We now operate the business.
Wait. Isabella? Nah, you ain't even kin to Johnny Isabella, are you?
Yeah, he's my father.
No kidding. Bob Dane.
Can we help you?
Yeah, I think maybe you can.
Truman riffles through files.
And I'm sure all your employee records are up to date.
I take it the police haven't been able to locate this David Jenkins.
Well, if you ask me, nobody's looked in the right place yet.
Maybe he took a vacation.
Truman stares at one of the files. As Lawrence cranes discreetly to get a better look, Truman hastily puts it away.
Well, I appreciate your help, Mr. Isabella.
Yeah. Did you find what you were looking for?
I don't know yet. We'll see, won't we?
Putting on his hat, Truman gives Lawrence and Joey a piercing look as he goes down the stairs.
You think you figured out where Jenkins is?
Well, if he did, I just gave you a way to find out.
Hey, Lawrence, you handle that real well.
Thanks.
We might just make a good team. Tell Leo to get the car.
Yeah, we make a great team, Joey.
Truman pulls onto the main road, then makes an immediate right turn up a street running parallel with the warehouse parking lot. Unseen by him, figures in the car park jump into a car, which then speeds towards the exit. The pursuing car makes the same right turn as Truman. Truman glances in his rearview mirror. The car is right on his tail. Truman smiles, looking satisfied. In the chasing car, Joey sits next to his driver.
He's taking us to the projects.
Yeah, no shit. Shut up and keep with him, huh?
Truman makes a right turn. Joey's car does likewise. They're in a car park next to several high-rise public housing developments, the projects. Now they're hurrying up a dim, graffiti-covered staircase. On a landing, a young boy walks towards them.
Hey, kid. You see a white guy come through here a couple seconds ago?
152.
152? Okay.
As they hurry along the landing, the young boy smiles knowingly, laughs silently, and opens up a banknote, seemingly checking the watermark in a ray of sunlight.
Hey, there ain't no 152. Hey, look at our fucking car!
The car has been propped up on bricks, its bonnet and boot opened. A boy flees, rolling the last remaining tire in front of him. As Joey arrives back at the looted car, Truman pulls away in a puff of tire smoke.
What's your buddy going east?
Joey spits and kicks the car with frustration. Briar is behind the wheel of his pickup truck. He's cruising on a three-lane motorway, heading straight for the high-rise skyline of Chicago. In his recognizable baseball cap, he now mounts a dingy staircase. At the top, he stares at a handwritten sign which reads, "No women allowed, no guests after 10 p.m, no cooking in rooms, keep TV room clean." He turns away with a slightly mournful expression.
Sure sounds like a fun place.
$65 a month, $42 a week, $650 a day, cash up in front, no cash, no flop.
Briar looks out of the hotel room window.
Leo. Used to pay only 25 for a whole month's rent back home.
Yeah, well, you know, friend here in Chicago now, so you know, better get used to those high prices.
Briar nods with a cynical look. Later, it's dark. Briar approaches the locked mesh gates of the warehouse car park. A sign is fixed to the gates. Beware of attack dogs. Briar takes out a large pair of wire cutters and snaps the chain, fastening the gates closed. Two dogs head straight for him. Calmly, Briar steps to one side. As the dogs pass through the gate, he steps inside, swinging it shut.
You fellas better work on that.
As the dogs throw themselves against the outside of the fence, Briar steals through the darkness, staying close to a high wall as he moves deeper into the parking lot. Carrying a briefcase, Lawrence crosses the parking lot towards his car. Briar sees him and pauses in the shadows. Daytime. Truman pulls his car over at the curb of a quiet street. Getting out, he heads towards a nondescript building, outside which hangs a faded sign reading West Town. He enters a large room with photos of boxers on the walls. Groups of elderly men sit at tables playing cards or stand holding pool cues.
Howdy. I need to talk to Johnny Isabella. I heard this is his club. No? Okay.
Walking into the room, he gives the card players the once-over. They studiously ignore him.
How you boys doing? You ain't gambling, are you?
You don't see no money on the table, do you? What
do you say? Gambling. Just a friendly little game, huh? How we doing?
At one of the tables, he snatches up a sheet of paper and studies it.
Yo, Vinny. Who's Vinny?
His eyes scan the card players.
Whoever you are, you're kicking ass, little brother. Of course, it don't mean nothing, does it? Just for fun, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And Isabella ain't here, huh?
Nope.
And no idea where to find him. Damn shame, because all I want to do is talk to the man.
A man appears carrying plates.
Hey, I'm John Isabella. What do you want?
Cuts. This.
Truman follows Papa Johnny Isabella into a kitchen. He's standing at a cooker.
So what can I do for you?
My name is Truman Gates. I'm the brother of the Northside employee who was killed the night of August the 8th, 1 week before you took over the company.
Sorry, I didn't know anything about anyone getting killed. As for my taking over Northside, it's no big secret. I've been after George Miller for 5 years, let me buy him out. It was a good deal for both of us, too.
Johnny tastes his sauce.
Needs oregano. You know, you should check with George about all that. But as for murder in a truck...
I didn't say anything about a truck.
Must have read about it. Something. I really don't remember. So if you're insinuating that I had your brother killed... Let me make something clear. I don't operate that way. I mean, to you, I may look like Al Capone or God knows who. I don't know. I'm a businessman. Like any other businessman, no better, no worse. And I'll tell you something else. I don't need to go around killing people to get what I want.
Let me tell you a story, Mr. Isabella. Years ago, one of my uncles was shot and killed. His wife was pregnant at the time, and she saw it happen. But when the sheriff asked her who did it, she just pointed here and said, "He knows. And someday he'll settle it." And 16 years later, he did.
Good story. Hope it's not a threat.
He offers Truman a mouthful of food, which is ignored.
I got 3 counties worth of kin that expect a certain amount of justice for that death. I'm just trying to save both of us a lot of bloodletting.
So what exactly do you want from me?
I want you to turn over the man who did it to the police.
You serious?
Yes, sir.
What? First off, I didn't have anybody murdered. But if I did, I never turned him over to the police.
I'm real sorry you feel that way, Mr. Isabella.
Hey, Gates. Truly sorry about your brother. Bad.
Oh, no, sir. He ain't seen bad yet.
but it's coming.
Truman glares at Johnny, then leaves. Looking unnerved, Johnny drops some spaghetti into a pan and moves to stare through the kitchen door. Then, with a look of frustration, he slams a knife forcibly down on a chopping board. A shiny brass gun cartridge is carefully stowed on its end. Its top side is engraved with the words Ashland, Kentucky. On the seat of a wooden chair are crowded together all the basic ingredients for making ammunition. Hans carefully pours powder from a small plastic scoop into another casing. In his hotel room, it is Breyer who is stooping intently over his deadly work. Suddenly pausing in his work, Breyer looks up suspiciously, takes a handgun from his trouser pocket and steps briskly to the door. He tugs it open and pulls the hotel owner inside.
Don't kill me!
Breyer looks up and down the hallway warily, then steps back into the room, uncocking his gun. He moves back to his work.
How'd you know I was out there?
Smelled it.
He starts scooping the powder again.
God fucking damn. What, are you planning on taking on a whole army?
Maybe. What's your name?
Harold.
How'd you like to make yourself $20, Harold?
What, I got a duel.
Know how to use a telephone?
Breyer takes a piece of paper from his shirt pocket and hands it to Harold, who opens it. On it is written a phone number.
I'm not back by morning. Call me Ken.
Darkness. Breyer steps across a series of parallel railway tracks. He makes a short leap from a high wall onto a fire escape, which he then climbs. Now he climbs a vertical wall ladder and steps onto a flat roof. Walking across the roof, he pauses, takes out a flashlight, and illuminates a door handle. He enters a room filled with discarded pieces of office furniture. A dim light shines in a far corner above a staircase. Breyer heads for it. In a brightly lit room, Lawrence is with his men, who are eating.
Hi. No? No, okay. Look, I'm going to take this upstairs to Joe and show it to him, all right?
Ah!
What?
That's not a good idea.
What? No. All right.
One of the men crosses to a cigarette vending machine. He bangs it with frustration.
Hey, why you such is?
What the fuck?
Hey, it got dark.
In the darkness, Joey opens his office door.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Stay right there.
It's your dime.
Moving along the hallway, he fastens his trousers, which are undone at the waist. He moves towards the main staircase, watched by Breyer, who stands to one side in the shadows.
What'd you do, stupid?
I didn't do nothing.
Why are you blaming me?
See if they got to
break your
leg. Hey, fuck you.
What the fuck is going on down here? That's what I want to know. Huh?
I don't know, boss. Leo screwed up.
I'm capping all the lights.
We thought maybe you...
The lights come back on.
Let's go finish eating. Come on. Hold me a viaggio here. Assai jamale.
Joey spots a tooled-up Breyer coming down the stairs.
Just turn around and join your buddies. Real easy-like.
Joey does as he's told.
Everybody get down on the floor, face first. Now!
What are you trying to do, rob this place? You know who owns it? Johnny Isabella, that name mean anything to you?
Means they got me the right place. Now get your butt down.
Hey, who are you? What do you want?
Get down, goddammit.
With a glare of reluctance, Joey lowers himself to the floor. He lies on his forearms, staring threateningly at Breyer.
My name's Breyer Gates. I want the man who killed my brother. Let's put our thinking caps on, boys. I don't have all night.
One of the men reaches for a gun. Breyer blows out a poker machine, then a glass-strewn table.
Jesus,
me your full time. Come out.
What's the memory doing now, boy? Gerald Gates. Shot in the back of one of your trucks.
Nobody knows anything about your brother.
He hits a water fountain which empties on top of Joey.
You just made the worst mistake of your life!
No, sir. I think you did.
It's Joey's date.
I told you, nothing kinky. This is kinky. Since you can't do anything, I called the cops.
Fair warning, boys. But I found out who killed my brother. Working around here is just gonna be no fun at all.
As Joey and his sidekick stand in a line like guilty schoolboys, Johnny Isabella examines the wrecked premises. He's in a suit and tie and has an overcoat draped over his shoulders like a cape.
You know how this makes me feel?
Huh?
This makes me feel foolish! You know who did it?
Yeah. We know.
Truman walks in. Noting the wreckage, he smiles.
Looks like you fellas had a little trouble.
Yeah. Well, it looks worse than it really is, Gates.
And that's why you ain't pressing charges against my brother.
Did I say it was your brother? Who said it was your brother?
Truman glances at one of the sidekicks, Leo, who looks uncomfortable under Joey's inquiring gaze.
Well, yes, well, see, the cops asked me, what he said, and I said his name was...
Sounded like it. Couldn't be sure. It was a misunderstanding.
Walking around the room, Truman picks up a takeaway food container.
Briar hates Chinese food. It sets him off.
Yeah, well, like I just said, it was a little misunderstanding with someone. Who? I don't know. But we got it worked out. Hey, we don't want to press charges.
You're going to take care of it then?
Yeah, we'll take care of it.
For your sake, I hope so. Because you mess with my brother, you mess with me.
Truman strides out under Johnny's watchful eye.
Fucking hillbillies.
I don't like this, Joey.
Papa John, they're nothing. They plow rocks for a living.
Johnny stares at him fiercely.
Interesting. The same thing was said about our own people in Sicily. Settle this. Now.
Joey winces as Johnny glares at him with barely concealed rage. Johnny then goes and puts his arm round Lawrence. Both of them walk to the door. Behind them, Joey's face is a mask of bitterness and anger.
Find him. Take care of him. I don't care if you have to go through every flophouse in Uptown.
Three of Joey's men sit in a car. One of them, Leo, spits out a piece of bread.
Pick it up. Pick it up. Jeez, if you weren't family, this is fucked, Rhino. We've been through every boarding house in five blocks. He's not here.
Briar's distinctive figure crosses the busy road.
He's here.
Now two of the men from the car, Rhino and Polly, climb the dingy hotel staircase. They pause briefly at the top and look around. Carrying takeaway pizza, they go to the hotel office where Harold is sitting.
Pizza delivery for Gates.
Well, see, that's going to be a problem. I don't want no food here.
What's his fucking room number?
Rhino points a gun. Now both holding guns, Rhino and Polly move cautiously along a hallway. Rhino presses on alone. Following him, Polly rounds a corner and is confronted by the looming figure of a long-haired man who stares silently from the doorway of a room. Giving him a wide berth, Polly presses on. They climb another short staircase. Rhino, who is in front, knocks over a liquor bottle in the dim hallway. In his room, Briar hears the noise. He looks towards the door. Outside, Rhino stands with his gun at the ready. On Polly's nod, he braces himself and kicks open the door. Curtains billow from the open window. Rhino hurries to it. Briar watches from behind a door, then runs and tips Rhino out of the window. As Rhino crashes down unharmed on the fire escape, Briar climbs onto the roof, closely followed by Polly. A train starts to move on the elevated section of track parallel to the roof. Briar keeps running. Polly pulls out a shotgun. Briar leaps onto the roof of the passing train. As the train pulls away, at street level, Rhino runs towards the car. Slightly stooped, Briar moves cautiously along the roof of the moving train. Now on one knee, he looks around and notices the car speeding down the road which runs alongside the track. Leo drives as Rhino looks across at the train.
Yeah, we got the son of a bitch now.
As the car continues the chase, Briar appears to be considering his options. He glances round him, then looks straight ahead with interest. A train is coming in the opposite direction. The two trains are now alongside each other. With a determined look, Briar runs back along the roof of his train, then leaps across to the roof of the other, where he lands safely on his hands and knees and is quickly borne away in the opposite direction. Below, the car speeds towards a train station. Looking relaxed, Briar sits on the roof at the very front of his now slowly moving train. In the station, Leo and Rhino run onto the platform just as their train pulls in. Running alongside a carriage, Leo spots something.
There he is!
He pulls a man's baseball cap off.
Fuck you!
The train doors close.
Hey! Wait! I'm sorry, Rhino! I'm fucked up! Sorry!
A double shot of whiskey is poured into a small glass sitting on a bar. Briar raises it to his lips and smiles faintly before downing it in one. Another shot is poured into the now empty glass. Truman walks up and stands beside Briar.
Well, look who's here. Is that what they teach you in airborne, how to sneak up on people? I thought all you did was jump out of airplanes.
They taught me to jump quiet. Beer.
Suppose you're taking me in for busting up that shop, huh?
Well, totally destroying a person's place of business does happen to be crime up here. That ain't why I'm taking you in. I'm busting you for carrying a concealed weapon.
You asshole. I found out more in 2 hours than you did in 2 weeks. I know who killed Gerald.
Joey Rossellini.
If you know, why ain't you doing something about it?
Because like I told you before, I need proof, solid proof, so he won't get off.
I'll fix it so he won't get off.
That's why I'm taking you in.
Truman handcuffs Briar, who throws the whiskey in his face, socks him in the jaw, and pushes him against the wall where he punches him mercilessly. Truman fights back and gets Briar in a headlock. Both men, still handcuffed together, struggle on a small dance floor in front of a stage. The bar patrons watch the fight with detached interest.
Hey,
Now Breyer throws Truman over his shoulder and onto the floor, but Truman manages to kick him in the face and get back on his feet. He rams Breyer's head against an amplifier.
Get up, big brother.
Now the brothers crash through a wooden barrier and onto the small stage, where they continue tussling, eventually bashing into a drum kit. They pull each other back onto the floor, where Truman eventually gets the other handcuff on Breyer.
You ain't one of us no more. You might talk, man, and fight, man, but in your heart, you ain't family no more. You're just a cop that came from the hills.
Now Breyer sits in a wire mesh holding cell, one hand cuffed to a bench. He impotently pulls against the cuff, a scowl on his still bloodied face. With his free hand, he puts his baseball cap back on his head and stares straight ahead. His wild eyes betray his desperation and confusion. Truman opens the front door of his house and goes inside.
Jesse?
Jesse is waiting for him, wearing pajamas.
Hey, what are you doing here? What? You got accepted to Chicago Symphony. No? No, that's not it? Well, then what?
She looks behind her. He follows her gaze. Now he looks her in the eye.
Yes? Yes? You serious?
He lifts her up and hugs her.
Is it true? Really? Is it okay to touch it?
It's down here.
Ah, yeah.
Tenderly, he places his hand on her stomach.
I love you.
A teddy bear sits on one of the chairs at the dinner table, which is decorated with two red roses and champagne in a silver ice bucket. Next, Truman walks towards Breyer's holding cell.
I got a deal for you. First, I want to know everything that was in Gerald's letters.
The brothers are in the car, Truman driving.
Pure and simple, it's like this. Anything you have that might help us catch Joey Rossellini, you share with me. We find him, we turn him over to stand trial. What I need from you is to help me find David Jenkins. He is with Gerald tonight, he's killed. I'm betting on the fact that he saw it.
I don't agree you're gonna take me back to lockup. That's your deal?
That's my deal.
Take me back to jail then. We both know who killed Gerald. When I get out, I'll settle it.
Okay, if that's the way you want it.
It's nighttime. Truman pulls over to the curb.
But while you're sitting down there waiting on your butt, I'm gonna find the proof on Rossellini and I'm gonna put him away myself.
What if this here Rossellini fella should take another shot at me? Am I supposed to stand around with my hands in my pockets?
Well, I sure as hell ain't.
Mm-hmm.
Got a deal?
I guess we got a deal.
Smiling, Truman pulls away from the curb.
You sure this is the place?
That's the place, all right. Just like your own.
They pull over to a dingy block illuminated by a couple of faint neon signs. People stand chatting on the pavement. Now a band are playing in a crowded bar. Most of the clientele are Afro-Americans. The brothers make their way to the bar.
What can I get you?
Two old styles on draft.
Draft, hell. I want a bottle.
You would. Two bottles and a little information, please. You know a guy by the name of David Jenkins comes here a lot?
The barmaid shakes her head.
Still want your beer?
Ma'am.
Truman checks out the room as the barmaid moves along the bar and has a discreet word with the bearded man sitting next to the wall. A man in a grey suit and red shirt clocks Briar, then glances over at the bearded man, who nods at him discreetly and leaves his seat. The barmaid comes back with the drinks.
Hey. Preacher wants to talk to you. Preacher.
Red shirt points a gun at Truman.
Now.
Say no to a man of the cloth. Briar, this fellow wants us to follow him.
Not me.
Briar, no! Look out!
Briar struggles with Red Shirt. More guns point at the brothers.
You ain't gonna believe this, but we really don't want any trouble. All we want to know is where to find David Jenkins.
Truman looks round appealingly. The bearded man, who had been sitting at the corner of the bar, comes forward.
Who is it wants to know?
Truman and Briar Gates. Gerald Gates' brothers.
You come to the wrong place.
No, they didn't.
Gerald's work colleague moves haltingly forward.
All right, people, now how about some...
Are you David Jenkins?
Second Bar Lounge is proud to be...
Yeah.
Baltimore,
can we talk to you outside?
Come on. He indicates that they should follow him. Rhino and Leo are in Briar's hotel room, picking up the mattress and emptying out drawers. They're obviously searching for something. Tugging the bed away from the wall, Rhino notices a large cloth which he grabs, unveiling a missing floorboard. Reaching into the uncovered hiding place, he triumphantly pulls out Briar's rifle. Truman, Briar and David Jenkins walk along the pavement outside the bar. Jenkins leads them to a section of nondescript waste ground.
I'd like to show you some photographs.
I can look at your pictures, but I didn't see anything, okay? You know, you're just as dumb as he was. I told him to pull over. Let him take what they wanted. But he wouldn't listen. You keep pushing this thing, you're gonna wind up the same way. These are bad people. You don't mess with them.
David, you can't hide from these people. They'll get you.
Master. If you're the same fella that Gerald wrote me about, you're gonna hate yourself for a long time for not looking at these.
You recognize either of these two?
Mugshots of Leo and Rhino.
Yeah, they were there.
Now, were they in the truck with him?
No.
Now Joey's mugshot.
And him.
David points at it.
In the truck.
David nods. Now a photo of Lawrence.
And him. Two in the truck.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Man, Gerald could see the two of you. Stay up.
Truman and Briar are back in the car.
I say we go to the vending company now and get them while they're not expecting it.
Thank Kentucky, Briar. And the deal was, if we found him, we let the cops deal with him. And right now, we're only halfway there.
How's it feel?
A little bit like I was hit head-on by a coal truck. Hey, you remember the time I took Betty Jean to the movies in Jackson, and you thought she was your girl?
She was, damn it.
Bullshit. And we duked it out to what, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. That was a bad one, all right.
Yeah.
Betty Jean, man, you should see her today. Real scuzz bucket.
No shit?
Yeah. Hard to believe we had a fight over the likes of her.
We had some doozies.
Yeah, we made a mean pair too.
Yeah.
Weren't the same after you left.
I'm gonna be a father, Briar.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Kid, goddamn. Little nephew, huh?
Your Uncle Briar.
Uncle Briar. Yeah.
As Truman brushes his teeth, Briar looks awkwardly at Jesse.
Appreciate you letting me stay here tonight.
Jesse glances at him, then drops her eyes, looking uncomfortable.
I have to tell you, I think what you're doing is wrong. You're welcome to stay here as long as you're in town, just like Gerald was. But this is my home, my family, and anything you do that threatens that is going to make you unwelcome here. Okay? Good night.
Fully clothed, Briar lies on the single bed in the guest room. He wakes with a start and raises himself up.
Truman!
Briar comes downstairs. It's daylight.
Truman! Where is he? I told him to wake me up.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, I'll be right back, okay?
Jessie leaves her pupil and goes with Briar.
Where is he, Jessie?
Is it work?
Oh, Haley, has he went after those sons of bitches that me?
Without you? Went after who? What are you talking about?
Last night we found out who killed Gerald. Didn't he tell you? He made a deal with me. I help him find the killers, and he keeps me with him till we catch him. But he lied to me. He planned to get him by himself the whole time.
Briar goes out, leaving Jesse standing motionless in the hallway. Now, a plush restaurant.
Hey, Julie.
Good morning, Mr. Isabella.
Lawrence walks in.
Have fun. Hey. Can I get some coffee? Thanks.
Morning. Morning.
Truman takes a seat.
How's this for a headline? Chicago mobster's son indicted for murder. Don't worry, Lawrence. Nobody's here.
Lawrence smiles and looks around the restaurant.
I haven't done anything illegal.
Oh, really? Well, I had an interesting talk with a fellow last night who claims different. My man said you were in the back of the truck with my brother when he was killed.
A waitress pours coffee.
That's good.
Enjoy.
Well, why don't you bring him in if you saw everything?
Oh, I will. Unfortunately for you, it's enough to put you away for murder. Even if you were just standing around in there. That's the law.
It's...
I don't want you, Lawrence. You know who I want. I want the man who pulled the trigger. I want the man you saw do it.
Joey's on the phone.
No. No. He doesn't have the money. Irene, he doesn't have the money. Look, Irene, I gotta call you back. Lawrence! Yo! What's the matter? You look like shit. Hey, talk to me. Think of me as your brother.
At home, Jesse watches a young girl practice the violin. As the young girl packs away her violin, Jesse walks to the front door. Carrying her instrument case, the girl follows Jesse, who opens the front door. A car pulls smoothly into the curb. Now Jesse is walking down the steps of the house. She steps onto the pavement with her young pupil.
Next week, alright?
Jesse watches the girl walk off.
Hey, Jesse.
It's Joey. He throws red liquid in Jesse's face. She reels back temporarily blinded. By the time she opens her eyes, Joey is gone. She stumbles up the steps to the house. Next, at the police station.
Gates. Jesse, what's wrong, honey?
In my face. They knew my name and they were waiting for me.
Jesse, just stay in the house. I'll be right there.
Listen. I don't know how to get it out of my eyes.
Just stay there.
Listen to me, Jesse.
Relax, Lawrence. Everything's taken care of.
What if it doesn't work?
Well, that's what we're gonna go check on right now. See, your father taught me something early on. Don't leave anything to chance.
They both leave the office.
Rhino, bring me the hillbilly shotgun.
In his car, Truman speeds directly beneath an elevated section of railway track. In bright sunshine, Joey and Lawrence come out of the office. They're accompanied by Leo, who's carrying a shotgun, which he puts in the boot of a car. The threesome then get into the car, which pulls away past the company vans and towards the exit gate. Truman swerves the car towards the curb. Running up the front steps of his house, he goes inside.
Jesse?
He pulls out a gun and heads upstairs. Pausing on a landing, he cocks the gun.
Jesse?
He moves towards a shut door.
Jesse?
Entering the bathroom, he tugs back the shower curtain.
Jesse's
in the shower, fully clothed.
What are you doing? Stop it!
She fends Truman off with her hands.
You lied to me.
I didn't lie to you, Jesse.
You didn't tell me everything.
Come here.
What's going on?
Come here, baby.
What's going on?
Stepping into the shower, he takes the bewildered-looking Jesse in his arms.
I'm gonna get you out of here.
At the hotel, Harold meets Briar on the stairs.
Briar, I tried something, but there's nothing I can do.
Shit!
Who are they? What's going on? I left it like they left it. I haven't touched a thing. On it.
Briar's room has been turned upside down.
When did they find him?
Last night.
You got a gun?
Me? Hell no. I killed somebody.
Briar enters the bar where he and Truman had the fight. The barman clocks him and stalks towards him.
You come to pay me?
I'll give you $100 for your gun.
I'll take the $100. Down payment.
And I'm in a hurry.
Look, this is a peaceful bar. We don't need you and we don't need guns to keep order around here.
Briar looks at him with disgust, then goes behind the bar.
Say what?
You heard me.
Briar grabs him by the face.
Your guns, Jack.
Come on, take it easy. Wait, man, it's right over.
Where?
It's right over here.
Open your fucking mouth. Where?
Briar pulls a shotgun from under the bar. Still glaring at the barman, he takes a box of cartridges and pockets them, then shoves the $100 down the front of the terrified man's shirt. The barflies look on expressionlessly.
There you go. Have a good day now, you hear?
Concealing the shotgun under his jacket, Briar strides out of the bar into the sunshine.
2342. 2342.
All units standby. Go ahead, 2342.
Yeah, request a mobile relay with car 5675.
By the river, a policeman holds a spent cartridge slug. It bears an Ashland, Kentucky manufacturing stamp.
5675, car 1. Go ahead, 5675.
5675, this is Antonelli. Truman, I'm trying to reach you.
Tony, did you get Lawrence Isabella?
Did I get him? Yeah, I got him.
Somebody whacked him. After they tortured him.
Near Tony, smoke rises from a charred body. Lawrence's driver's license lies on the ground nearby.
Who did it?
I think it was your brother.
Joey sits at a table with Johnny Isabella. The older man is in tears.
He never had a chance. They ambushed him. By the time I got back, they were gone. We found the gun.
Briar's shotgun.
These people are animals. They don't give a fuck about anybody. Papa John, just give me the chance to take care of it, please. For Lawrence's sake.
Frank approaches.
John, I just heard. I made some calls.
What did it, Frank?
Well, they only know he was killed with a 12-gauge shotgun. Close range. If this is the hillbilly's gun, give it to the police. Let them handle it. With the weapon, they can close the case fast. They have a suspect.
No!
kill her. You kill her. You kill her.
Harold! Harold!
You missed him, Truman. He stormed out of here about an hour ago.
Truman's in his car.
Requesting backup, Lake Michigan Vinden. Sangamon and Hubbard. You got that, Sangamon and Hubbard?
A tall figure looms up, silhouetted against the night sky, into which clouds of vapor drift. The figure pulls a shotgun from inside its jacket. On a bank of CCTV monitors, Briar's progress through the warehouse complex is being watched in silence by Joey, Leo, Rhino, and Polly.
Lawrence, you little prick. This wasn't such a bad idea after all.
Briar heads towards a door. Opening the door, he sees the voices are coming from a tape recorder. Watching, Joey gives a signal to two heavies who mount the stairs.
Got him.
Briar sees the shadows of the advancing heavies and hurries into another office, hiding under the desk. One of the heavies rakes the room with a machine gun. Briar fires back, hitting him in the chest. Briar spots the second heavy. Briar moves from his hiding place. Suddenly, Joey shows up and fires directly at Briar.
Sleepy time, Gates.
Come on, Joey, the cops are here. Come on!
Truman pulls into the warehouse parking lot. He stops next to a marked police car and runs towards the building. Barely alive, Briar makes a feeble attempt at crawling across the debris-strewn floor. At the top of the stairs, Truman sees the body of one of the hoods.
Briar?
He moves slowly towards the open office door.
Briar?
Now inside, he sees Briar and stoops to cradle his head. Briar's glazed eyes focus on Truman.
Should have waited for you. We could have whipped them together.
Now his eyes are unseeing.
Briar?
Briar stares lifelessly.
I'm at the Lake Michigan Vending Company, which earlier tonight was the scene of one
death. Truman's outside.
Truman! Look. They got breaking and entering. Assault with a deadly weapon. Murder.
It was a setup, Tony.
I know it was a setup. You know it was a setup. Rossellini knows it was a setup. But just knowing doesn't change anything.
As they face off, Truman thrusts something into Tony's hand.
Yeah, it does.
It's his police badge. As Tony looks at it, Truman is already driving away from the crime scene. At the hotel.
Hey, Harold! Check out Channel 3.
Burglarizing the premises, an unidentified man killed two company employees before being cut down by security guards. John Isabella, reputedly well-connected to members of organized crime in Chicago, recently acquired the company after an employee of the former owner's Northside Vending was found murdered.
Harold squints at the piece of paper with the phone number which Briar had given him. A world away, the village basks in soft sunshine. A phone rings in a diner.
Alice Gates.
My name's Harold. What's that called? Anyway, I'm a friend of Briar Gates. He asked me to call you in the case that something happened to him. Well, he was shot last night. The guy who thinks here on the corner of Broadway and Wilson.
Appreciate it, friend.
Hanging up, the man immediately picks the receiver up again. Next, the bearded man has a large snake draped round his shoulders.
Rosie, we're going on a trip. Yes, my love. Yes, my love.
He places the snake in a transparent container. In the diner, men load shotguns as women make sandwiches. Men hug the woman, then move to the exit, carrying both weapons and food. The snake man walks in.
I got room for a couple with me. Hell no.
In the hotel office, Harold swigs from a bottle. A figure appears at the door. It's Truman.
Howdy, Truman.
Harold.
I got all this stuff here for you.
Harold hands a large holdall to Truman.
I'm sorry.
Truman searches through the holdall as if looking for something specific.
What are you gonna do?
I figured I'd do a little hunting.
Where?
Cemetery.
He leaves. Now, Frank attaches a small bugging device to the underside of Polly's jacket lapel.
Joey likes to brag. And I want to hear him brag.
Joey is helped down the aisle of a church. Later, at a restaurant, Joey's eating with Rhino and Polly.
So then he starts begging. I had to laugh. Please, Joey, please. Finally, I just said, fucking shot him.
You know, boys, I'm gonna miss this part of the job.
It's nighttime. On the street, Leo stands next to the car. He moves towards the source of the noise.
Come here, Leo.
Disappearing into a car park, his shadow can be seen on a wall. As he looks around, another shadow appears, grabs him from behind and drags him away. In the restaurant, Joey and the guys put on their coats. A body crashes through the window, then shakily attempts to get up. It is Leo.
Holy shit! Leo! Are you okay? What the fuck happened?
It's Gates. He wants you to meet him.
Joey and Rhino head for the door.
That hurt.
Joey and Rhino walk to the car. The words, "You forgot one," are written on the windscreen.
Anywhere he wants! Any fucking place he wants!
In the restaurant, Paulie's on the phone.
Frank.
About Joey. He's been bragging. Right. Tell Papa John.
A car passes through an imposing arched gateway, its headlights piercing through darkness. As it rounds a shallow bend, it becomes clear that it is driving through a cemetery. The car comes to a halt. Joey, Rhino and Polly get out. All three carry machine guns. Joey walks to the rear window on the driver's side. Leo sits inside looking anxious. He lowers the window and peers out at Joey.
I don't like this, Joey.
What's the matter, Leo? Didn't you ever plan a cemetery when you were a kid? Relax. I don't plan to be here all night.
Another car makes its way along the cemetery road. As it slows down, Joey goes to meet it.
Hey. Franco, I want you to go down the end there, turn right, park the car, come back towards me, okay?
Okay, Joey.
A door marked office is pushed open. Inside, Harold is dozing.
You Harold?
Harold looks up. It's two of the men from Briar's Village. As they stand in the doorway staring at him, Harold nods groggily. Next, in the cemetery stands a large stone statue of a grieving woman, draped in thick folds of hooded cloth. Truman emerges from behind it, taking in his surroundings. An old school bus cruises amongst traffic. It has a large snake drawn along its side. The words snake pit are spelled out on the snake's back. Above is written $1 entry. Inside, the sides of the bus are lined with transparent cases holding snakes of various sizes. At the front of the bus, Harold stands next to the snake man who's driving.
They love you.
Harold nods and smiles happily. Next, Joey and his men walk through the cemetery grounds, shining flashlights, guns at the ready.
This is it, Joey. The veiled lady.
Another group of men holding flashlights run towards them.
Rhino, go over there. Leo. Polly.
Joey approaches the new arrivals.
Go find Rhino. Stick with him. You guys, over there, trees.
The men fan out as directed by Joey.
Hey, Gates! I'm here! Yo, Gates, I thought you were the smart one! But I guess you gotta make the same mistake as your brothers!
It's your mistake, Rossellini. When you set up my brother, you forgot to kill me.
That's why I'm here.
Joey nods. Rhino emerges, firing a machine gun. As all the others join in the shooting, Truman takes evasive action. Pieces of shattered masonry fly from gravestones and monuments as the cemetery is swathed in gun smoke. With the shooting fest over, they run towards the spot where Truman had been standing.
He's gone.
I could swear I hit him. Where the fuck did he go?
As one of Joey's heavies emerges from behind a gravestone, he is hit in the chest by an arrow. Truman takes aim again. A second heavy falls dead. Truman runs and switches position. As Joey looks round with a bewildered expression, Truman fires an arrow into a tree right next to him.
Fuck! A fucking arrow!
Totally panicked, Rhino and Polly fire into the air.
Son of a bitch wants a war! We'll give him a war!
Truman has switched position again. Now he's behind another one of Joey's nameless heavies.
Yo!
Truman takes a knife from his boot and hurls it into the chest of the heavy. Looking increasingly frantic, Joey and his remaining men run towards their latest casualty, who's lying dead on the ground. Joey sees Truman's discarded bow, picks it up, and throws it into the darkness.
Spread out. Find them.
Truman limps towards a narrow gateway and leans against it. He has sustained some kind of leg wound. He lurches forward towards a gravestone and, reaching under a pile of dead leaves, pulls out a large and deadly-looking crossbow. As Truman readies the crossbow, Leo, Polly and Joey close in.
Time to pack it in, redneck.
Truman ducks behind a gravestone. Truman purses his lips and whistles. Truman almost smiles as he sees a large group of village men emerge from behind gravestones and trees. A cartridge is loaded into a shotgun chamber, an arrow placed on a bowstring.
What the fuck are we waiting for, Joey? Let's just nail him and get out of here.
Hey, if you're so fucking brave, Polly, why don't you go out there and get him yourself?
Polly steps from behind a monument into the open.
Piece of cake.
A man throws an axe from the shadows. Polly collapses, the axe buried in his chest. The other villagers move forward. Under heavy fire, Joey flees. Steadily, the villagers make their way towards Truman. Surrounding Truman, some of the men tend to his wound.
Well, I'm glad to see you guys.
Just tell us where you want us, Truman.
one of Joey's men blunders into a man trap. Bloodhounds are let off the leash. They lope through the cemetery in pursuit of Rhino. Seeing a large vehicle, Rhino heads for it and climbs in. It is the Snake Pit bus. The Snake Man wedges the door shut with a length of wood. Inside, the snakes are loose, wriggling and writhing all over the place. Rhino's eyes widen in terror. Outside, an amused Harold peeps through the window. The Snake Man nods at him. Inside, the reptiles are now slithering all over Rhino's shoes.
Fuck!
Terrified, Leo stands on a plinth, clinging to a statue as a bloodhound tries to get at him.
Good dog, good dog. Okay, you found me. Now go away.
Using animal calls, the villagers move through the darkness, closing in on Joey, who is now alone. Truman leaps on Joey, knocking him to the ground. The two exchange kicks and punches, Truman stunning his opponent with a barrage of powerful blows to the head. Joey reels away from the punishment, barely keeping his footing, eventually falling against a gravestone.
Get up.
Joey opens a knife and turns suddenly, but Truman avoids the slashing steel and lands another kick and punch. Joey again thrusts with the knife, but Truman assumes a boxer stance and jabs him fiercely in the face. As the fight continues, a car approaches, slows to a halt, and dims its headlights. Truman throws Joey to the ground and puts a knife to his throat. He looks down on his brother's killer.
You don't have a prayer!
Gates!
Let him go.
It's too late, Isabella.
It's Johnny.
It's never too late.
Truman!
One of Johnny's men has a gun to the head of a villager. As the rest of the village men close in, a cocked gun is placed against their captured colleague's temple. Looking round, Truman seems to acknowledge that the game is up and reluctantly removes the knife from Joey's throat. Backing off, he leaves Joey on the ground. Looking on, Johnny now pulls a gun.
Time to end it.
Truman stares at him expressionlessly.
Move away, Joey.
Shakily, Joey gets to his feet and stumbles to one side. Truman still stares at Johnny, who with a look of grim determination now turns his gun towards Joey. Disbelief clouds Joey's face.
Papa John, what are you doing?
This is for killing my son.
The bullet hits Joey squarely in the chest, sending him spinning to the ground. Truman's face is still a blank as he looks at Johnny. Joey's body lies motionless in the dead leaves. Approaching Truman, Johnny holds something out in his hand.
I believe this was your brother's.
Truman reaches to take it. Johnny holds it fast for a moment. Their hands almost touch.
It is over between our families, though.
Yes.
Johnny relinquishes the object. It's Gerald's knife. Then turns his back on Truman.
It's done.
Daylight. Accompanied by Tony, Truman emerges from the police office. At the top of the main staircase, he hands Tony a single sheet of paper, then slowly limps down the steps towards the exit. Outside, Jesse gets out of a car and heads towards the police station. Meeting Truman on the steps, she hugs him.
Never scare me like that again.
His face leaning on her shoulder, Truman shakes his head. Solemnly, Jesse looks him in the eye.
What about Briar?
He shakes his head sadly.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
You're my family, Jesse. You and the baby.
He looks at her with a hopeful smile. Securely in each other's arms, they slowly leave the police station. Tony watches them go. The End.
See what we've done.